Today's podcast is kindly sponsored by Boyne Valley Honey. Boyne Valley Honey is Ireland's favourite honey brand, and one of my daily healthy habits is incorporating Boyne Valley Honey into my daily routine. The health benefits of honey have been used for centuries. Honey acts as a natural remedy for cough and also has natural antimicrobial properties. I add Boyne Valley Squeezy Honey to my porridge every morning. Thank you, Boyne Valley Honey, for supporting this series of my podcast. I hope you enjoy listening today. This podcast is about breastfeeding, and I decided to do this after I read a paper from the Faculty of Pediatrics, Faculty of Public Health Medicine, and the Institute of Obstetricians and Gynecologists at the Royal College of Physicians in Ireland. This paper was published in May 2021, and it actually highlighted that Ireland has the lowest rates of breastfeeding in the EU. And I was really surprised about this, so I decided that I would like to investigate further. And I'm very lucky today to be joined by one of the lead authors on this paper, Dr. Meredith Kinishita, and she is a paediatrics specialist registrar, lead author on this paper, and she's going to talk to us today about breastfeeding and ways that we can improve our rates here in Ireland. Thank you so much today for being with us today, Meredith.
Oh, you're welcome. Thanks for having me, Jaren.
Okay, so I've loved this paper and it's been really eye-opening for me. Can you tell me... let's go through some of the benefits of breastfeeding.
Absolutely. So the benefits of breastfeeding are numerous. We know that, you know, it is an individualized source of nutrition for babies. But in fact, the more we learn about breastfeeding, the more we find that it's actually about so much more than just nutrition. So when a baby is born, the colostrum or the first milk that mothers produce is kind of specifically tailored to a newborn baby. And as babies age and grow up, the milk changes with them. So it's absolutely amazing, and it's not a static source of nutrition. In addition to that, then, we know that there are really important immune factors that are contained within breast milk. So this actually helps babies fight off infection. And we know that this contributes to them having lower rates of infection throughout their childhood. One of the other benefits that we know from numerous studies is that there, it does give you a lower risk of sudden infant death syndrome. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we don't exactly know why this is, but it is something that we know we can do and we can advise parents that is beneficial in stopping this.
Yeah, so it really has so many health benefits. So for the baby, improved immune function, it has lots of essential fatty acids, antibodies, vitamins and minerals. And then as well for mother, there's actually health benefits for breastfeeding for mum as well, isn't there?
Absolutely. So mums who breastfeed end up having a lower risk of breast cancer and a lower risk of developing things like type 2 diabetes even later on in life. Mm. So it's not only for the baby, but for the child as they grow up, yes. As well as for the mum herself.
Yes, that's an important point you made, that the not only as a neonate and an infant, but even later in life, you're still getting those benefits, aren't you, even into, you know, childhood to adolescence?
Absolutely. It's setting you up for these really important metabolic benefits. It's laying the groundwork for your metabolic health. So, you know, even children who are breastfed, they will also have lower rates of type 2 diabetes as they grow up, yes, as well. So it's important from a population health point of view, not only child health.
Absolutely. So I have to say I was stunned. I really did not know that our rates were so low here in Ireland. So we have the lowest rates of breastfeeding in the EU in Ireland. Why do you think that is?
So it's a really interesting thing to think about. You know, really, it's a historical thing. And it's that we have a tradition of formula feeding here. And really, if you think back to a lot of the different countries that have lower rates, you can kind of trace it back to around the mid-century or 1950s when there was very, very strong marketing of infant formulas for the first time. So much so that people had a feeling that they were as good, and maybe in some cases felt that they were better than breast milk. So this was the information that parents were getting. And that sets you up for a situation where by the 1980s, the rates of breastfeeding are only about 30%. So one third of mothers even starting to breastfeed their babies. And when so few people are breastfeeding, that means that that's what people are used to. That's what they feel is the norm. That's what's catered to. And that's what people have personal and family experience with. So it's a real uphill battle then to try and turn that around and encourage people to breastfeed when, you know, they don't necessarily have those supports in place anymore.
Yes, because the paper that that I'm referring to here and that you're the, one of the lead authors on, did say that, you know, like the feedback from women was you need family support, you need, you know, friend support, you need full community support to actually do this. So if you are surrounded by, you know, say, you're like maybe your own mother, parents, in-law, friends, and they're all saying, you know, I formula fed and that was fine for the baby, you know, those factors are going to have an influence because you need all of those supports, don't you, to really be... get established on breastfeeding.
Absolutely. I mean, family and wider community support is so important. And I think the other really key thing to say is that it doesn't only make a difference if your own family or your own mother has breastfed. We know from studies even done in Ireland that if, even without having breastfed, if your own mother or if your partner is supportive of breastfeeding, then you are much more likely to start and continue breastfeeding. So just because they don't have the personal experience, you know, having that kind of community support and encouragement around you and respect for maybe what you're trying to do and your choices is really important.
Absolutely. Respecting people's choices. Yeah, that's so important. Another one, another thing that I found really shocking as well was that some of the feedback was that people felt embarrassed. And when I first read that, I was shocked. But now that I'm in tune to it, I'm starting to see why people might feel that way. So people reported feeling embarrassed so that they didn't want to breastfeed in public. And that there was that then that meant that they were, you know, breastfeeding in cars and public toilets. And, you know, obviously that's, you know, that's horrible if you're, you know, on a weekend away and you need to do that. You know, so is there any way, like, I just wonder, is it something, you know, just in our culture and society that we feel embarrassed for some reason, or that women feel embarrassed? What do you think about this?
Yeah, I mean, I think that part of it is this kind of issue of visibility. You know, if it's something that we're not used to seeing very often, then it's remarkable if you do see someone breastfeeding in public. And it's not always even just about modesty, but it's just, you know, making some mums might feel that they're making others uncomfortable by breastfeeding, for example, in a public place. And this is really what they've reported to us when you know, studies have been done and saying, you know, why or maybe what are some of the difficulties in breastfeeding? So I think one of the things that we can look at is maybe trying to allow space for breastfeeding in public. So, you know, be accepting of that if you do see it. But also, you know, some people, even with that, may feel that, you know, it's more appropriate for them to breastfeed in a designated area.
Sure.
So we need to have some of these designated areas in public places.
Absolutely. Because as well, you know, it's a nice quiet bonding time for you and your baby. So, you know, you might, may not necessarily want to be doing that in a public place. You need, we need designated breastfeeding spots. So is there anything else? What do we need to be doing as a society? Because this is a whole society issue, isn't it? It's not about, you know, just one about women targeting women. Really, it's a societal thing that we all need to be a part of it, isn't it?
Definitely. Oh, definitely. So, I mean, one of the things that you look at and come across when you look at kind of breastfeeding literature is that countries that have very good breastfeeding rates or are very supportive of breastfeeding, they often have other public policies that go hand in hand with that. So, for example, in Ireland, we do have the Maternity Protection Act, which does advocate that women should have breastfeeding breaks up to 6 months after they've had their baby. But in fact, it probably needs to be more than that. You know, a lot of people, if they're lucky enough to only maybe go back to work at 6 months, you know, their baby's only starting to start solid foods and they may be just getting used to those solids, and they still may need to be expressing or even breastfeeding during work, for example. So having those facilities in places of work can be incredibly helpful and make people feel that actually, you know, this is an important thing and a normal thing for people to do.
Yes, absolutely. That's really important. So that's one of the things that we could do, is employers giving lactation breaks, breastfeeding breaks to women who choose to continue breastfeeding beyond 6 months, because the WHO does recommend it up to 2 years and beyond, isn't it?
That's exactly right. So, you know, they do recommend exclusive breastfeeding for the first 6 months, and that's really kind of to allow weaning onto solids or spoon feeds or whatever you're using to wean, but that alongside those complementary foods, you should continue that breastfeeding. And they say 2 years and beyond. You know, there's no real time where they say you need to finish, and that really depends on the individual's choice.
Yes,
I think,
of course. So then, in terms of what I talk about, if I ever mention breastfeeding actually online, the huge wave of messages back is there's no support there, and there's no support. I had nowhere to go. Nobody could help me. What could I do? There was nobody to help. And so I suppose, what can we do in terms of supporting women in the community? And I know, you know, lactation consultants are so important, but I think we probably don't have enough publicly funded lactation consultants.
That's 100% true. So I think really what we need to do is support women in how they've chosen to feed their baby. And part of this is helping to normalize breastfeeding and to be clear about what is normal baby feeding behavior. So, you know, for example, waking at night to feed is a very normal thing, or feeding very frequently, particularly in the early days, is normal. And that breastfeeding, although it's natural, it's something that you and your baby need to learn together.
Yes.
So even if you've breastfed before, that doesn't mean that it's going to be completely smooth sailing and that you won't necessarily need help at some point.
Yeah.
So having access to that support is key. Lactation consultants or international board certified lactation consultants particularly are available, but they're kind of quite sparse within the HSE. So they can be really hard. They're under-resourced. It can be hard to get access to them while you're in hospital, and sometimes even harder once you've gone home. So there does definitely need to be an increase in terms of resources for lactation consultants. And actually recently there, the health minister did actually announce that they are giving more funding for specifically for lactation consultants within the HSE. And I think this is a huge step in the right direction because women need help in that period of time early on when they're starting to breastfeed. And while it may be your public health nurse or your paediatrician or your GP who can offer that support, sometimes you also need that specialist support.
Absolutely. So then just in terms of, you know, you mentioned about, you know, policies and public health policies. Is there anything else then on, you know, public health level that we need to be doing, you know, in terms of, I suppose, advertising of formula products?
Absolutely. I think the first step is probably to acknowledge and to make ourselves aware of the vast amount of marketing that goes into formula. So there are actually rules and regulations around what formula companies are allowed to advertise. For example, they can't advertise first infant milks. So what you see them doing instead is advertising follow-on milks, for example. And it's a really seamless way of maybe skirting around that that regulation. And the more you kind of look at these rules and see how they get around them, you know, it really is eye-opening. So I think, you know, there's always going to be marketing, there's always going to be advertising, but sometimes just thinking about actually how is this affecting me, or how am I familiar with this product, even can be a good starting point.
It's actually, as you say, it's eye opening once you're in, once you're tuned into it and you start to see it. Actually, as we're on that point, you know, those follow on formulas, and is there any evidence that they provide any added benefit or anything?
No, so I mean, really, once you have a baby who's around over a year of age, for example, and they're weaning onto solids, they're getting a lot of their nutritional benefits from solid foods alongside the breast milk. But, you know, if you are weaning from breast milk, you can give them after a year that regular cow's milk. Mm-hmm. So there's no real need for the follow-on milks. Some of them have things like added iron, which a lot of children can be a little bit deficient in. So that is one possible area that they may be able to help with.
Okay.
But the other side of that is they're a lot more expensive as well,
yes,
you know, than normal milk. So yeah, is that really something that babies need? Most of the time, I don't think so.
Yeah. Okay. Then one of the big things as well mentioned in this paper was education of healthcare professionals. And what the feedback from women in the paper was that they were getting conflicting advice from you know, whether it's the midwife they met in the hospital, the public health nurse that they met at home, their GP, their practice nurse. And I can totally understand how frustrating that might be. Like, what am I doing? Because people really want to do the right thing.
Mm-hmm.
So getting conflicting messages from healthcare professionals is obviously frustrating. So that was one thing. And the other thing was just a complete lack of knowledge amongst some doctors and nurses.
Yeah.
So is there ways that we can tackle that?
Definitely. And this is one of the main kind of aims of the paper, is to look at, as the Royal College of Physicians, how can we, you know, improve education of healthcare professionals so that we're not getting as much of this conflicting advice. So you're absolutely right. I mean, one of the things that I think is important to start with is education of medical students and student midwives, student nurses, for example. And, you know, it's important that they have clinical exposure to breastfeeding, you know, during their placements in hospital or their GP practices. And, you know, leading on from that, nobody expects every doctor to be, you know, an expert in breastfeeding.
Mm.
But I think it would be really helpful to have some educational supports, particularly from lactation consultants, for medical professionals.
Yeah.
And that doctors and nurses and midwives know that where they should refer people when they are having difficulties as well.
Okay.
So who to refer to and where, who could possibly help them.
Yes.
And then lastly, I think having approved resources for doctors particularly is really important. So, you know, the HSE.ie or mychild.ie have really great resources. They have videos and they even have kind of a live chat function where during certain hours you can live chat with a lactation consultant. So that's a really great benefit for people who are attending your services. So you can refer them there.
Okay.
And also for doctors, if they are prescribing medications or they have people who are taking medications already and there are questions about, you know, the safety around breastfeeding, there are good resources out there. One of them is breastfeedingnetwork.org.uk, which is run by Wendy Jones, who is a UK-based pharmacist who specialises in medications during breastfeeding. And she has really, really helpful kind of fact sheets, medication fact sheets and up-to-date information that can be helpful for people in the medical industry even.
Yes.
So, you know, I think it's important to highlight where people can find these resources, because unless you know where to look, it can be overwhelming.
Absolutely. So, okay, two really good pieces of information there. So I assume, you know, if you're a parent and you're struggling with breastfeeding, so you can go on to mychild.ie and you can actually do a live chat with a lactation consultant.
Yeah, okay. It's not, this is a relatively new service and I think, you know, was really, really well used during COVID times when people weren't able to see their public health nurses or other health professionals as frequently as they normally would. So it was a really good way of getting that information, whether it's reassurance or guidance in another way, in real time. It's not 24/7 now, obviously would be great. But, you know, it is a resource that people can be referred to, you know, if they're struggling.
To get good, reliable information. And also what you mentioned about medicines as well, because, you know, you might, a woman might need medicines for whatever reason. Of course, then there can be concern both on the behalf of the doctor and the mother that the medication might get into the breast milk. So we have good, solid resources that we can trust so that we can support the woman in continuing to breastfeed.
Yes, absolutely. And I mean, it's always worth having that discussion with your doctor, you know, whether you're taking a medication that's prescribed or even if it's over the counter, you know, absolutely the right thing to do is to check with your doctor. But also, you know, we need to be able to refer people to those resources ourselves as medical professionals that, you know, this is where you can get good information.
Okay. And then what about, you know, because we're talking, I suppose we've spoken here a lot about what we can do in the community in terms of, you know, what employers can do, you know, what public facilities can do and what we can do in terms of medical education. What about the hospital facilities, I suppose, just after the baby is born? What can be done there to support people?
Yeah, this is a really important part because I suppose it's right at the beginning of people's kind of decision to how they feed their baby, and really the key thing is to support people in that decision. So if someone has decided that they would like to breastfeed, things like avoiding advising supplementing with formula unless there's a clear medical reason. So there are lots of clear medical reasons why you may be advised to do this, but you know, it should be clear why that's happening. And then outside of maternity units as well, I think it would be really useful to have facilities in other hospitals where mothers could express milk, for example, store their expressed milk if they happen to be admitted for other reasons, for example.
Yes.
And I think it's something that we're really lacking in our hospital system, even though it's part of a health system where we're trying to advocate for breastfeeding. So we need to allow people to do that.
Yes. And actually, another point that was raised in this paper as well, which I found so interesting, was the idea of donor milk programs. So we don't have one in the Republic of Ireland.
Yeah, that's right. So, I mean, we do use donor milk in Ireland.
Yeah.
So we use a donor milk bank that's based in the north of Ireland.
Yeah.
And that works very well. And we use it for kind of extremely preterm babies or very low birth weight babies who, for whom breast milk is really essential.
Okay.
But we don't have our own resource, and there are lots of mums who would be willing to donate and do sometimes donate even to the Northern Ireland Milk Bank, but we actually don't have ownership over that ourselves. And I think it would be a really important important thing to have within Ireland, so that we're not having to kind of go across to a different country together.
I really had no idea there was one in Northern Ireland. That's amazing. Okay, so is there anything else that we've, you know, missed, or that you, any important messages that you would like to share? Because you're doing now an MD in breastfeeding, so this is really, this is your passion, and you know, you're like the best person in Ireland to talk to about this.
Well, I mean, I'm certainly very passionate about it. I think it's so important. And again, I just think really the take homes are that it should be about supporting women's choice and how they want to feed their babies.
Yeah.
And if we are recommending that people breastfeed, putting in place those supports to help them do that. And then I suppose the other thing is that, you know, the breastfeeding rates in Ireland are getting better.
Yes.
You know,
yeah,
so we do have low rates.
Sure.
Absolutely. But they're going up. So in the last 15 years, you know, the number of women who have started breastfeeding in hospital has gone up from 50 to 60%.
Okay.
So that's a slow but steady increase.
Sure.
And as well, you know, the statistics that we have from breastfeeding at 6 months of age, although those are very low, they are out of date statistics, you know, so we don't actually have a good way of measuring the progress that we're making.
Okay.
You know, a lot of work and effort and policies are being developed to try and help this, help people breastfeed if they want to. But, you know, in a way, we don't know how effective that is if we're not keeping track.
Sure. Yeah, that's a really important point. We are making progress and rates are getting better. And now, hopefully, with all of the extra awareness and all of the supports that are hopefully being put in at all levels, we'll now continue to see those rates to improve.
Yes, exactly.
Thank you so much for being here today, Dr. Meredith Kinishita. I really appreciate your time.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Thank you. So I'm delighted now to be joined by general practice nurse and international board certified lactation consultant, Orla Dorgan. Orla, thanks so much for joining me. So we've discussed the benefits of breastfeeding, but you're actually going to tell us like how we actually do it and give some tips. And your Instagram page is brilliant. You're so dedicated and really you're supporting women. So I'm delighted to have you here today.
Thanks so much, Dearing. Yeah, delighted to be here. And I think it's so important supporting mothers. I think it's such a vulnerable time as well, especially in these times when they can't actually physically go to classes and stuff. And I think, you know, having a podcast like this or even my Instagram page where they can refer back to, like, I think it's so important. So it is for them, the support.
You're doing amazing work. And the reason I decided that I really wanted to do a podcast on breastfeeding is there was a really interesting report. It was released by, it was the Faculty of Paediatrics and Obstetrics and Gynaecology and Public Health at the Royal College of Physicians in Ireland. So that's a mouthful. But anyway, they released a report and it said that our rates of breastfeeding in Ireland are actually the lowest in Europe. Mm-hmm. So I was actually shocked. I was thinking, what's going on here? Why is this happening? And some of the reasons that women said that they didn't breastfeed is that they just said that formula feeding was preferable. Mm-hmm. They didn't have family support. They didn't have community support. I suppose like people like you, that you just weren't there where they mm-hmm. live. They didn't have support maybe in the hospital where they are. Didn't possibly have support maybe at workplace and things like that. Some women said they were embarrassed as well, mm-hmm. which I was so shocked to see. Then for some women who actually had started breastfeeding but stopped early, some of them said that they just felt they didn't have enough milk. Some women were too tired. Mm-hmm. And a lot of women said they had difficulty with technique and that they stopped because they had sore or engorged mm-hmm. breasts. Mm-hmm. So What would you say are your like top tips to like establish good breastfeeding and keep it going?
Yeah. So I suppose my top tips are always getting the information on board before you have your baby. We all know knowledge is power. And I always describe it a bit like learning to drive a car. We would never just hop in a car and drive. We would always take a lesson first with the driving instructor. And by taking a breastfeeding class with somebody like myself or other lactation consultants, you're getting all that information on board. So I'm teaching you where the steering wheel is and where the gear stick is and all of that. And you're in the passenger seat and you're looking at everything. Yeah. When your baby is born, that's when you sit in the driving seat and now you're taking off.
Okay. So you need to do the theory test first.
A little bit. Yeah, okay, exactly. Yeah. By taking the class, you know, you're taught everything about generally the benefits of breastfeeding. And we know there's a huge amount of benefits there. A lot of my class, what I concentrate on an awful lot is positioning and latch.
Okay.
When you get your positioning right, chances are you're going to get a good latch. And when we look at latch and how to actually latch a baby on, there's a few little things we need to know. So there is. And it's more so how it feels for a mom, more so than what it looks like.
Okay.
You know, so that's really important. So taking the class would be the first thing there. Get your confidence up, feel really empowered and think, right, I know I've got this. And your baby arrives and you're like, yeah, I have a fair idea what I meant to do. And if things are starting to go wrong a little bit, saying, aha, Orla didn't say that in her class or we didn't learn that in our class, you know then to reach out for help an awful lot sooner.
Okay.
You know.
And I think actually one of the good things now actually about COVID is that like people like you and I think there are so many more online as well that you can you offer online classes and partners can attend
exactly.
as well. And you mentioned that as well just before we started recording, that partners attend, and that's actually so important because that report that I read, one of the big messages was that it's not just the woman breastfeeding the baby. Mm-hmm. She needs support from partner. She needs support from wider family. You know, if you have the support of your partner, you're much more likely to
Definitely.
Continue doing it. So that's one of the really good things
Definitely.
About your classes.
You know, and I find my classes, I suppose, before COVID were always in the room.
Yeah.
And I think the dads-to-be always felt, or the partners, we felt a bit intimidated coming into a room full of pregnant women. How were they going to see a boob in the room? What was they going to do with it?
Yeah.
You know, besides when they're at home doing an online class, they're on their couch, they're in their gym jams, I can't actually see them. So there's an awful lot more partners sitting in because they feel a lot more comfortable. Mm. And we know ourselves, when we're feeling comfortable ourselves watching a class from home, we can take in an awful lot more.
Yes.
When you're pregnant or even with a new baby, often we don't remember a huge amount of things.
Yeah. So
the partners really are that person who remembers the stuff and encourages the mom to go on if she is running into difficulty or even reminding her of different things. I think the partner is so important there. So they are.
Yeah.
They play huge. I think when breastfeeding is going well, there's always a good partner in the background. Mm. And even when I do the online consults, I would say about 90% of the time the dads are there. They're holding the camera for me. They're the ones often asking the questions.
Wow.
So they are,
That's fab.
And I think to me that I love to see that. I think it's so important. And they're usually the couples that thrive breastfeeding their babies then.
Yeah, women really need support.
They
so,
do.
You know, if we have a friend or family member or colleague, whatever, we need to be supporting them because that support is really, really key. Yeah.
And even saying to them, you're doing an amazing job. That's all we all need to hear just to keep us going.
Absolutely.
You know,
it's so important, to new moms just to let them know.
So important, yeah.
So in terms of like, in terms of positioning, what's the best position to put yourself in, to put yourself and the baby in to establish good latch and breastfeeding?
So I suppose being very relaxed, number one. So there's, I suppose, loads of different positions we can use. And we often think it has to be such and such a position, has to be a certain angle, but it doesn't really. I suppose if I was teaching my classes or if I was teaching moms in the general practice, you know, I'd always start off first. Why don't we do the laid back one first? That's where you're leaning back on the couch. Your back maybe 45 degrees.
Okay.
Your legs are up on the couch. You could even be in bed lying backwards. That's a really comfortable position, number one, for you.
Okay.
Babies on top of you then, so they are, they're falling in on top of the breast. And when baby's in a natural laid back position, they naturally elicit all of their own instincts to actually breastfeed.
Yes.
And that's what's so important.
Okay.
Often in the first hour or two after a baby is born, they're usually very alert and they can naturally find the breast. But sometimes we can take all that away because we're rushing and stuff. Or somebody might come in and say, this is how you breastfeed, and put the baby on in a position and maybe taking away their natural instincts.
Yeah.
So that laid back position would be the first one. I would always say, have a go at trying that.
Yeah.
If we were to look back at women breastfeeding hundreds of years ago, that's the way they were.
Yes.
They were lying backwards. Baby was on top of them, so it's so natural. And also it gets a deep latch. You can imagine babies falling in on top of the breast, their mouth has to open wide.
Okay.
The other one then, and that position is also really good for moms who have a cesarean section as well.
Yes.
I also had cesarean sections, three of them, and more so with my third, I really used that one. I just felt it was really comfortable. I wasn't sitting up straight, I wasn't you know, compressing the wound and whatever.
Sure.
But the other positions then would be a rugby hold, where baby, or a football hold, baby's underneath your arm.
Okay.
And that can get a really good latch. Can feel a bit awkward for some mums though, all right?
Yeah.
But that's a nice one. And the other positions, it would be kind of the cradle holes, where baby's lying in front of you. You might be sitting more upright. And the one at night that I really like would be the side lying position.
Okay.
Where mom is lying down and baby's tucked right into her. There's no gap between baby and tummy.
Okay.
And baby's really tucked in. They're slightly looking up at the breast. And they might have, you know, if they're in hospital, they may have the cot side up so the baby can't go anywhere.
Yeah.
So doing that in a safe way can be a really lovely position as well.
Okay, got there. Those are really nice tips. I'm learning so much already. And what you said there about, you know, the natural instincts of the baby and natural reflexes, you know, they just kick in.
Yeah.
And that report as well that I read did mention about that first, you know, the first moments of life and that importance of that, you know, people not rushing in saying, oh, this is how you breastfeed, you know, just allowing the natural instincts and the skin to skin
is
so important. And where possible to get that skin to skin time, because when you have skin to skin, you're more likely to continue with breastfeeding.
Exactly.
And keep going.
Yeah. And skin to skin is so important, even for babies when they're born. I suppose inside in the womb, they're so safe and they feel very cocoon. And when they come out, it's kind of like, oh, my God, bright lights. The noise and smells, and it's like, where am I? And where they feel safe is actually up in the chest area.
Yeah.
And when they're there, it relaxes them down, relaxes their breathing, their temperatures, their blood sugars, all of that. And also helps mom as well. It actually relaxes her down as well.
Yeah.
But when baby is there, and I think this is just so amazing, the areola around the nipple.
Yeah.
Has Montgomery glands, and they emit a scent that's very similar to the amniotic fluid that the baby was swimming around in. So when baby's up in your chest, you're kind of thinking, how on God's earth do they know where to go?
Yeah.
But actually, when they smell that scent, that naturally makes them go towards the breast area.
Wow.
So isn't that, I just think that is so amazing.
And like, that is so amazing. And that really like drives home like how natural a process it is.
Yeah.
And how, you know, just with some help and guidance and support, you know, that women really can try it, you know, if they want to do it and they're motivated to do it, but they do need that support. So one of the other things then was that for some women, if they did choose to breastfeed, they tried it but then stopped. One of the main reasons that they stopped was painful or engorged breasts or sore nipples. So do you have any tips and or tricks for that?
Yeah, so the engorgement often can happen on day three or day four when your milk, I suppose, is starting to come in. So when baby is born, they have the colostrum in the breast. It's in very small quantities because the baby's tummy is quite small. And also gives baby a chance for them to coordinate their sucking, swallowing and breathing at the same time.
Yes.
Around day three or day three to day seven, that's then when the milk starts to come in. It's in bigger volumes. Baby's tummy is starting to slightly get a bit bigger. So that's often the first time where they might feel the breasts are really full and really engorged.
Okay.
If they're really full and really engorged, you can do a couple of little tips. Maybe trying to hand express off some of the milk if the breasts are really full, just to soften it a little bit.
Okay.
There's other little techniques we can do by pushing the nipple area backwards and pushing the fluid back. Really good if you're lying down, you can do that.
Okay.
And letting the baby feed quite a lot during those days. Taking pain relief if you're not already on it after your delivery. Cold compresses can be really good as well, just to help the pain in the breast. And if you're at home, this is where the cold cabbage leaves can come in.
Okay.
So the greener the leaf, the better. Wear an old bra because they can stain the bra.
Okay.
But the cabbage leaf can help reduce any of the fullness and the pain and the engorgement that's there. And just leave them on for about maybe 20 minutes, nothing longer, because it could actually reduce the supply.
Okay.
We don't want to do that. We just want to help with the engorgement. Yeah.
Okay, so some brilliant tips there as well. So then what were the other reasons that people stopped? Difficulty with technique, we've gone through that. Oh yeah, not enough milk, that women were trying but they just felt that they didn't have enough milk. And I think that that's something that women would report to me a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So if a woman is, if she feels that she doesn't have enough milk, is there any tips that you can give?
Okay, so if mom came to me and said she wasn't sure she had enough milk or not, so a couple of things I would look at: what's the baby's weight been like? What are the pees and poos been like over the last little while? How often is baby feeding? They're the big things I would really look at. It, the frequency of their feeds: are they feeding like every hour? Are the feeds really short and they fall asleep? And trying to get to the root of why is there low milk supply there? Why is baby feeding maybe so regularly? And then what we would look at, we would need to probably put a plan in place. Maybe that baby probably will need some top-ups maybe.
Okay.
Probably a formula to start off. And sometimes those babies might need a little bit more energy and calories to actually feed well at the breast. Then we put a plan in place for some pumping, possibly after every feed maybe. She may need some what we call galactagogues, so some stimulation maybe to help with the milk supply as well, in the form of maybe herbal supplements or that as well. But really lots of good breastfeeding when baby is at the breast. Some breast compressions as well is really important. Switching sides really regularly. Often we kind of think, you know, stay on one side because we have to drain the breast and we have to get the hind milk. But actually when we're trying to build up a milk supply, switching breasts really regularly, three, four, five times is really important. What happens there is every time baby latches on initially, it sends a really strong signal to the brain to release a good, you know, flow of milk. The more stronger signals we have, the more milk that's made.
Okay.
So that's why pumping is so important. We need to send a lot more signals to the brain to actually stimulate the prolactin receptors.
Okay. God, that's the really, really, really good practical advice. And I think as well, if somebody's struggling, you know, to reach out for help.
Definitely.
Because that's one of the big, I think, things that the feedback that I've gotten when I've spoken about breastfeeding just in the last 24 hours, that people come back and they say they just didn't have the support and they just felt a little bit alone, a little bit lost. And whilst like there's work to do, we have work to do in Ireland in terms of, you know, making sure that medical students are better educated and that there's more education in GP training and just more supports in the hospital and all of that. So there's all of that work to do. But the people to look out for help are the International Board Certified Lactation Consultants.
Yeah.
Those are the people to go to. And it can be done remotely now.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think some of you can be maybe afraid to come to us by our term consultant. I think sometimes as well, it might sound a bit scary maybe, but actually we're not really, you know.
I think it gives me the confidence that you know what you're doing and you're trained in it. And
I
was reading about the qualification, and you have to update every like 5 years.
I'm updating right now. So I'm 5 years qualified this year. So I've seen in all my education that I've done over the last 5 years, we have to do, I think it's like 75 hours studying between those time we've to submit it then. So I've submitted mine there now. After every 10 years, you have to do an exam. Now, this is the last year you have to do an exam. So I'm kind of looking, I'm going to get away with doing, because that exam is like the leaving cert. we have to update that. Compared to, we'll say, nursing, we don't really have to. Okay, we have to update during the year, but not as seriously as this, I suppose, you know. Yeah. So, we'd always be taking courses and everything every, you know, couple of months and that.
I don't find the title intimidating. I think it really, you know, gives confidence to women that they're in good hands. Mm-hmm. So one of the things I see as well as a GP is when women are coming in, obviously in the earlier days, that baby becomes unsettled, whether it's constipation or colic or reflux, and that's obviously exhausting, worrying, upsetting. And then that, I think, can be a time for women as well that they just feel that they can't keep going because they're exhausted. So do you have any tips? We'll say firstly, constipation. Mm-hmm. So if you're breastfeeding your baby, baby's constipated, baby's very unsettled, what tips do you have for people there?
So I suppose a breastfed baby, it would be rare, I suppose, for a breastfed baby to be constipated, I suppose, really. Because often you find, I suppose, the breast milk is easily digested in the body. It does pass through pretty easily. And I suppose in the first 5 to 6 weeks, we do like babies going very regularly. And in those first 5 weeks, if they're not going regularly, when I say regularly, you're after about the first week, you're talking 3 to 5 poos every day. Okay. And that's what we're looking for. They should be nice and yellow. If they're only doing 1 or 2 poos in those very early weeks, I would worry they may be about supply.
Okay.
So I would. After that, then, come the 5 or 6 week mark, we don't expect as many poos, or the baby may not have as many poos. And if it's just 1 or 2 every couple of days, but baby's putting on the weight and they're thriving and there's no symptoms, the baby's a happy baby, that's absolutely fine. Yeah. So it is. Okay. I suppose you'd see it more probably in your formula fed babies, all right.
Okay.
But I would worry, I suppose, more so hydration is probably the big thing there. Are they actually getting enough milk, you know?
Okay, so then we can go back to our tips on supply there.
Yeah.
Okay. What about if, say, baby has reflux or, you know, they need to start medication for reflux or something like that? Do you have any tips for continuing with breastfeeding in a baby who has reflux?
So I suppose my whole thing is all about getting to the root of it. Why has your baby reflux? Mm. What's going on? So with a breastfed baby, we would look at things like, are they first of all getting enough milk, or are they getting nearly too much milk?
Yeah.
Okay, we can't overfeed a breastfed baby, but maybe mom has oversupply. So that milk is just, there's just so much milk there. That baby might not be getting all of the full milk in the breast. I suppose they might often be getting a lot of the foremilk and not the high milk. Not that I worry massively about that, but we'd look at these symptoms of the baby, so we would. And we might need to work with that. Mummy maybe even reducing supply if she had oversupply. Has she got a fast litter? Her baby goes on and they're gulping loads at the start, and then they tire really quickly, so they may not be getting the full breast. But also that can cause a lot of air to be taken in at the same time as well when they're gulping. And that can lead to reflux symptoms as well. Mm. So it can. Also, as well, even looking around at the environment in the house, is it a really busy house? Is there so much noise when the baby actually can't really relax down as well? So having a quiet-ish environment as best you can.
As much as possible.
Lots of skin to skin. If the mom is feeling quite anxious and stuff as well, sometimes the baby can pick up on that as well. So there would be things I would look at. Also things like, I suppose, oral restrictions as well. That can often lead to symptoms of colic and reflux as well.
Okay.
So it can, and that'd be something to look at too.
Okay, and again, you know, reach out for help.
Exactly.
You know, if you're having difficulty. And then colic, what, do you have any tips for colic?
So colic is usually a baby who'd be very unsettled, and I suppose when we look at colic, they're crying for 3 hours a day, 3 days a week for 3 weeks.
Yeah.
So, you know, again, probably with these babies, I would look at the environment, really, of what's happening.
Okay.
Often you find with colic babies, do they need a few little more cuddles maybe, and up in the arms a lot more? They might need the sling a little bit more. Even going back to the birth as well, what kind of a birth do they actually have? If they had a really tough old delivery, for example, forceps or vacuum or a section, often those babies find it really hard to process their emotions and that. So they can find it really hard to relax their system down as well. So, and also I'd look at milk supply as well. Is it too low? Or what's happening with baby feeding at the breast as well. There's always, to me, there's always a reason for these happening. You know, and getting to the root. We're like detectives, I suppose, getting to the root of what's happening.
That's it. And just taking time to step back and see exactly what is going on. So then as well, is it okay, so if you are, you are breastfeeding, but maybe the person is exhausted or wants, you know, for a partner to do feeds overnight or something. So I suppose your options there are pumping and then topping up with formula. Is that okay? And what do you think about that?
Yeah, so I always say, and this would always come up in my class, so that they would like dad to give a bottle at night, for example, you know. And I do say that's absolutely fine. I would say if they could manage, if they were able to get to that nearly 4 week mark. Okay. Just because, I suppose, when in those early days of breastfeeding, we want to send off so many prolactin receptors to the brain to fire off the milk supply. I explain a bit like, imagine an empty opera house and all the chairs. Every single breastfeed you do, you're filling a chair. By the end of the 6 weeks, you want most of those chairs full.
Yeah.
By skipping a breastfeed, so for example, if you breastfed at 6 o'clock in the evening, you give a bottle at 9 o'clock at night, and then you had a breastfeed again at 12, there's nearly 5-6 hours there where a baby hasn't been at the breast. Mm. Around that 9 o'clock time when baby would normally be at the breast, a signal has been sent to the brain to say, aha, baby's not here, we don't need to make any more milk.
Okay.
So that's why exclusively breastfeeding, ideally in the first couple of weeks, is really important. But obviously I'm all about, like, if mum is like at the end of her tether and she's like, I just can't do this, absolutely, you know, give a bottle. It's not the end of the world. So it's not, you know, and then she might like to come the 4 week mark. If she does want to introduce a bottle, say at night time or whatever, that's absolutely fine as well. So it is, you know,
okay.
And she can do that over, you know, just drop that feed and introduce the bottle at that time.
Okay. And is pumping and then partner giving the breast milk, it's preferable?
Yeah, ideally.
Yeah,
yeah, okay. It is ideally. Yeah. So if mum wants to do that, she can pump in the morning time when their milk supply is much fuller, and she can offer that bottle at night then.
Okay. You gave great tips earlier on breastfeeding after C-section. What about things like lifestyle things like, you know, alcohol, food, cosmetics? I think you did a good post on Fig 10 and breastfeeding. These are the practical things people need to know.
Of course.
So what about alcohol and breastfeeding?
Oh. Yeah. So, yeah, no issue with alcohol there. And I suppose the whole kind of rule of thumb would be, you know, if you're safe to drive your car, you're safe to breastfeed your baby.
Okay.
So you are. And that's really, so I suppose ideally, yeah, in the first few weeks when you are breastfeeding so regularly, you know, making sure you have the longest gaps. And that can be very hard in the first week or two when baby can be feeding every 2 or 3
yes.
hours. But when you get to know your baby and maybe feeds are, you know, the feeds are spaced out a little bit longer, what I would nearly say is at the end of your breastfeed, that's when you drink your glass of wine.
Yes.
So before the next feed, then you have nearly a 2 hour gap maybe,
okay.
Before your next feed.
Okay.
You know,
okay,
so trying to have the longest gap and have your glass of wine, and hopefully baby feeds at 8 o'clock. I might not wake until 12 at night instead of doing that in the morning time when it's not ideal to drink your glass of wine. So having the longest gap ideally would be the best thing, you know, when you want. And it's absolutely, you know, we all probably enjoy our glass of wine too a lot of the time. And that is important to, we don't have to not have that glass of wine. We have to have our normality too.
Absolutely. And what about, is there any foods in particular? That's actually, funnily enough, something I get asked a lot as a GP, you know, are there foods that I'm eating that are now going into breast milk and into baby, and that's causing baby to be fussy? So are there any foods to avoid?
Not generally, because baby would have been exposed to all of those foods if you're having changed your diet drastically during pregnancy.
Okay.
So baby's already been exposed to those. Generally not, unless now baby's having other symptoms, for example, rashes or funny poos and stuff. Okay, then maybe we would look at something like an intolerance to dairy, but that it would not always be the case. But in general, if baby's happy and all of that, or you might have had one evening where they're upset and you think, what did I actually eat? Chances are probably was nothing.
Okay.
You know,
yeah.
So unless it's a very regular thing every day, then I would look at something else then.
Okay, yeah,
look at something on the diet. But general, no.
Generally not, yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Then what about, you know, cosmetics, skin products? You know, there are things that we advise for pregnant people not to do when it comes to cosmetics. Is there anything with breastfeeding to avoid?
Not usually. So fake tan, we can use that as well. And like, as I was saying in the post, you know, put it on where you kind of have the longest gap again.
Okay.
Often retinols, I'll often get questions about that.
Yeah.
And that depends on the provider as well. But actually, you know, they do say it, you can use it during breastfeeding as well. So you can. So there's nothing really, I would say, to avoid. I'd always say ask your GP first, though. Always check.
Yeah,
you know.
But there's no big red flag or anything.
No,
yeah. Okay.
There isn't, yeah.
And then for medicines, you mentioned a good resource as well. So is this, can any person who's breastfeeding, can they download the Lactimed app? Or would
Lactimed
you need
app.
Kind of help of a nurse or GP to go through that with you, or can you go through it yourself?
You could check yourself.
Okay.
I do think it's always worth, though, because nearly a lot of those might say as well, or obviously, you know, if you're looking at something from the pharmacy, they'll say, you know, you can't use in pregnancy and breastfeeding.
Yes.
But actually, when we go into Lactimed, actually you can. It
yeah.
is always worth running it by your GP
yeah.
as well, or a lactation consultant as well. It's an app that I would use. Wendy Jones will be a breastfeeding and pharmacist in the UK, and she's one as well that people would link in with an awful lot as well.
Yeah.
So she is. Or Thomas Hale, who I have his book at home, he'd be very good to link in with as well in the US.
Okay, yeah, that's such a good point you make. That, I mean, almost everything, if you just look up the insert that comes in the box, just says it's like absolutely
exactly.
nothing. You know?
Yeah, so you can't take a thing, even like for hay fever and stuff
yes.
like that. So it is always worth checking.
That's it.
You know, really, because sometimes there's no very, very minimum amounts of pass through and that's still safe.
Yeah, exactly.
You know?
And sometimes I feel like I have to undo. I'm like, okay, that's just what it says.
Yeah.
But like, we're actually safe. Yeah, we're
exactly,
fine.
Exactly, yeah.
Okay, so those are the resources that you can go to as well to support your continued breastfeeding. Is there anything else, Orla, that you would like to share with people listening in terms of supporting them to continue doing it?
I think, you know, building your support up before you have your baby.
Yeah.
And I always say, you know, have a number of a lactation consultant in your phone. Breastfeeding support groups are really important okay. as well. So you
yeah.
have like your Quid, Jula, Leish League and Friends of Breastfeeding.
Yeah.
They're really, really good resources. And these are moms who have breastfed their own babies and would have a certain amount of training as well. They are really knowledgeable girls as well. And I'd always say, so in different parts of the country, they live different, like they would have Quid, Jula, Cork, Quid, Jula, Galway, I'm sure. So finding out your local one of those as well.
Mm.
They often do Zooms as well once a week and stuff like that, yeah. or once a month. I think linking in with some of those as well can
yeah.
be really, really useful. And even chatting to friends who've had successful breastfeeding journeys, maybe, because
yeah.
often we hear of the negative ones, but actually
yes.
it's the good ones we need to hear as
completely.
Well.
Completely.
Do you
I
know?
Think then as well, as you know, say if you haven't had the best journey with it, like a lot of the feedback that I've gotten from followers has been, oh, you know, so-and-so told me not to do it, or
mm-hmm.
a lot of it is pressure from others to not do
yeah.
it for some reason. So
yeah.
I think we need to be mindful about that it's the person's choice.
Exactly.
And to support them in what
mm-hmm.
they want to do, because I think we can be awful to say, oh, you know, I tried it and it was a disaster
yeah.
or whatever.
And I think as well, they can often hear a lot of different, for example, you know, in the hospitals, the midwives are amazing. They might have all different tips to give them, and then
yeah.
the poor mom might be really confused then, and that's then when things may fall to the wayside a little bit. And I suppose that's really where the knowledge beforehand comes on board. They're
yes.
very sure their way. I would give them all a book.
Yes, yeah, you have a book here. It's
yeah.
gorgeous.
So I always say, bring that book into the hospital with you. That's your Bible.
Yeah.
You know, and a lot of moms will say that was their Bible. So whatever is in there is it.
Yes.
You know,
so if we go onto your Instagram page, can you buy the book via
no,
your Instagram?
No, it's only for
okay.
people who take my class.
Okay, gotcha. Right.
Yeah.
Okay, but you know, that's
yeah.
important too. You take the class.
Yeah.
So actually, yeah, that's a really good point, because I actually imagine that a lot of people just, you know, they go in and they have the baby and then they say, right, we'll try breastfeeding now and figure that one out. So
yeah.
if we're prepared, is there anything in the hospital bag that you would recommend to support breastfeeding and start it in the hospital?
Yeah, so I suppose if you were to buy anything for breastfeeding first, I'd obviously maybe like your lanolin cream is a good thing to have, which
yes.
you'd apply to your nipples maybe before baby breastfeed, which can give it an extra layer. You might find the nipples can be that bit sensitive maybe day three or day four, and baby's feeding a lot more, there's a lot more milk coming through, so that can be really helpful there. Even things like compresses after a baby feeds, multi-mam compresses can be really handy as well to pop on
okay.
after a feed.
Yeah.
And apart from that, we don't really need much more. A few breast pads probably in the bag somewhere.
Yeah.
And I suppose talking about pumping and stuff like that, I wouldn't always say buy a pump before your baby comes, because actually you might not need a pump at all.
Sure, yeah. So
you know,
it might be just waste an extra clutter.
Exactly. Yeah,
yeah.
Yeah, you might never use it. You might spend money on it. You probably can't really sell it on kind of thing again.
Yes.
You know,
yeah, and
so
it's an expensive time with
exactly.
a lot of paraphernalia otherwise.
Yeah,
yeah, okay, right. So
yeah.
That's some lovely tips. Orla, thank you so much. I think that was really useful. So anybody who is thinking about breastfeeding or just wants to learn more, I think even if you're expecting or not expecting, you know, just so that you can know for future reference, and partners as well.
Mm-hmm.
Or even if, you know, like as well for friends, like we have to like support, like, because that support
definitely.
Network is so important.
Yeah,
you know?
I think even more so in COVID times now,
yes.
you know, we're not seeing our friends as much and stuff like that. So I think, you know, even doing your little calls with them and stuff like that, or just picking up the phone and checking in on a mom who has a new baby, regardless of how they're feeling, just checking in, I think, with them as well, you
yeah.
know,
yeah.
I think it's so important.
Yeah. Thanks so much for being here today, Orla. It's a pleasure to meet you.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you. Thank you for listening to today's podcast, which was kindly sponsored by Boyne Valley Honey. Boyne Valley Honey is Ireland's favourite honey brand, and you can follow them on Instagram at Boyne Valley Honey for inspiration on how to incorporate honey into a part of your daily healthy routine.